Thank you, everyone, for coming. It's a great pleasure for me to be able to be on stage introducing a good friend of mine, Sai, who has been doing a lot of work. He comes from San Francisco, where we do a lot of work together in a hackerspace called NoiseBridge. And among other things, the talk that he's given tonight is one example of some of the stuff that he works in, but he also does a lot of things like massage and posture, and he's even a developer on the side. So this man is really smart, and he's actually spoken about this exact topic at NoiseBridge several times, and people have shown a lot of interest.
In 5 minutes, though.
Yeah. You've done several talks in 5 minutes.
That's true.
Yeah. 5-minute talks are actually really hard to do. So.
But fun.
Yeah. So everything that Sai has done has been very fascinating. He's opened my eyes to a lot of things, and I think that everyone here is going to be at least somewhat enlightened or at least amused by some of the things he has to say. He is one of my favorite speakers, so I'd like everyone to give a round of applause for Sai.
Thank you very much. Right. So. So like I said, if you have short questions during the talk, long things, wait until later. Also, I have a paper in the proceedings. It's also online. So please read it. It's good. It covers a lot of material that I do not have the time for in this talk. This talk is mostly going to be applied demonstration and not so much linguistic theory. I had to cut out a lot of stuff to be able to fit it in time. And even so, I'm going to be going fairly fast. And all of this is Creative Commons, of course. So do stuff with it and tell me about it. That's about what we're doing. Most of the time that we're going to spend here is on actually making a very, very small language. But if you want to know more, if you want to expand it, etc., come to the workshop, which is right after this. So what is a conlang? A conlang is a language that people make up. Usually what we mean by this is a language that has its own grammar, its own vocabulary, and that humans can use to talk to each other about more or less anything, just like any other natural language. We're not talking about like a language game like Pig Latin or Lefosprache, and it's not like a programming language, it's not jargon like hackish or whatever. It's a real language. So what kinds of conlangs are there? The most common kind of conlang is an artlang. The most high-profile ones are used in novels or films or games and so forth. But usually it's just people who want to make a language for themselves. So I'm sure you all know people do all sorts of things for just the personal fulfillment or artistic expression. For some people, it's painting. Some people make model railroads. Some people make secure decentralized botnets. Artlangers are the same, but they make languages. So we're going to play a game. This talk is a participatory talk, and in a few minutes I'm going to ask you to actually use your brains a little. So to get everyone warmed up, if you think you know the answer, just shout it out. By the way, if you give an answer that I use, either here or later in the talk, come up to me afterwards and you can get a sticker. Bribes always help. And yes, it's the same one that's on my laptop. Incidentally, the image on the sticker is the conlang flag. It's the Tower of Babel against a rising sun. Because if any of you know the Babel story from the Bible, it is when God got pissed that all the humans were getting uppity and made us talk a bunch of new languages. So we thought it was kind of appropriate for us. Anyway, so the first question is everyone ready?
Yes.
Thank you. That was a good one. So, does anyone recognize this? Ellen sila lumen omintielvo is what it says. Yes, Quenya. This is Tolkien's Elvish language, Quenya. It's probably the most prototypical, pretty artling, but everyone has a different aesthetic, really. Sometimes they're very different. Klingon, for example, sounds really harsh and is fairly linguistically weird. Duritok doesn't even have any voiced sounds or vowels. It's got sounds like and but these are all still artlangs because they're made to fit an aesthetic concept. Auslangs, by contrast, are used by people who want a single neutral language that'll be easy for everyone to learn and not as imperialist as just making everyone learn English, which is what I'm doing now. They're far more popular to actually speak than Artlings, because Artlings don't really care that much about getting other people to use their language. They just make it for themselves. There's a drawback, of course, which is since Auglings can only really succeed if everybody adopts them, there can only be one. And this used to cause a lot of flame wars, but fortunately the Auglingers have mostly settled down into a status quo nowadays. So, La abel oi havas felon, sed ilin ne taugas por karesi. What?
Esperanto.
Yes, Esperanto. It's not the oldest, that would be Edo perhaps, and it's definitely not the best designed Auxling, sorry. But it is by far the most popular. Other Auxlings have tried to improve upon it. They use a simpler writing system without little hotchips and whatnot. They take vocabulary from parts of the world that aren't in Europe, and so forth. But really, Auxling has been completely dominated by Esperanto. It's by far much, much more popular than anything else. Engelangs, however, are kind of weird. They're really the hacker version of a conlang. It's kind of hard to generalize what they are overall, because they're all doing something different, and they all do something that's fairly radical effects on the language. Sometimes people make it because the creator wants to fix something in a natural language from their perspective. Some are just sort of thought experiments or philosophical challenges, and some are just for the challenge of making something that's really weird. Here's one. Shmaru yamelbike nichlishkule. Anyone recognize that? Lojban, yes. So in English, a pretty little girl's school could mean about 10 different things. In Lojban, you can be very specific about which one you want. This one happens to mean a small and pretty school for girls, as opposed to, for example, a school belonging to a somewhat small girl, which is, again, a pretty little girl's school. There's a trade-off, of course. It's more precise, but it's also kind of complex. Anyway, speaking of Lojban... So, Florian and Timo, stand up. Come on, stand up. If you want to learn Lojban, talk to those guys. They're running a workshop tomorrow. So, I'm definitely a hacker. I'm an Engelanger. One of the things I'm working on with my partner Alex Fink is a language that's spoken by two people using finger presses. So zoom into my hands. Here is an example. Ready? Sorry. Everyone got that? Probably not. That means, may your conlang break your mind. It's part of a Christmas card that we sent out recently, because the community had a big Christmas card exchange, and that was part of our contribution. Anyway, if you want to know exactly what that feels like, you can talk to me later, and I'll demo it for you. The other thing that I'm really interested is non-linear writing systems. This is Skylar Devine's OWI. The example here is the biblical story of the Tower of Babel, again. If you think of standard writing systems, they're basically arrays of arbitrary symbols. They don't really use the fact that the medium is two-dimensional in any way. Nonlinear writing systems like this are more like graphs. They use the surface and the medium in an inherent way to express the grammar, and they try to optimize for how the writing system itself could work instead of just being a transcription of speech. Anyway, talk to me later or go look at the OWI site. It's pretty good. So how do you actually make a language? It's kind of an intimidating thing, right? Usually you'll have a goal in mind when you start, but it's useful to spend a little time to think of what exactly you're trying to do. Do you just want to name your D&D character? Do you want to translate Hamlet from the original Klingon? What do you want it to sound like? What is the culture of the speakers? Is it going to have any unusual features that are going to affect it in a really broad way? These are things that you really need to think about. But here is where we are going to get creative. Instead of just talking about how to make a language, I figured it'd be more interesting if we actually make one together. I'm going to give you a bunch of questions. Some of them are multiple choice and some are open. For the multiple choice ones, I'm going to list the options and then a second time go over each of the options, and I want you to cheer for the one that you like the most. For the open questions, just yell out a suggestion when I prompt you, okay?
Yes.
Good, you'll learn. So, we are going to make a fairly simple naturalistic art lang. You should, of course, explore other options on your own or talk to me afterwards or in the workshop. There's just a limit to how much I can do on the fly in front of 300 people. So, what aesthetic are we going to go for? Pretty, harsh, or weird? Wait. Pretty, harsh, weird. Figures. So, also, does anyone have any twists they want to put on it? For example, maybe the speakers think that rhyming indicates something that's true or good. Maybe it really matters to them whether they're talking to someone of higher or lower social status. Ideas? Anything?
No excessive use of vocals.
No vocals. As in voiced?
No excessive.
Do you mean vocals as in voiced consonants, like d? Yes? Okay, anything else? Clicking noises. We'll get to sounds in a minute. Anything sort of more overarching or grammatical?
Negations are reversed.
Negations what?
Reverse sentence.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting idea. Sure. Okay, so that's a few ideas. So actually, first I'm going to write them down. So. Weird. Negations are reversed. Minimize voiced consonants. And I think that was it, right? Am I missing something? Sorry? That would be a little bit too complex to cover in this kind of talk. Talk to me later. Oof. Again, a little bit too complex. I think we've got enough for now, though. Let's see. Okay. So we have an aesthetic and sort of an idea of overall what we're going for. We need to decide what sounds are going to be in the language. Languages actually vary quite a lot in what sounds they have. Some languages have stuff like and that you'd probably find unusual. And other languages don't have sounds that you're really used to, like sh, th, or g. I'm going to be writing all of these down in the IPA, the International Phonetic Alphabet. You're going to need to learn this if you want to talk clearly about sounds, but we just don't really have the time to go into it now. So, if you know it, great. If you don't, oh well. Okay, so, almost all languages have the sounds p, p, t, k, a, and e, or something close to a and e. So I'm going to add those. What else should we add that will sound weird? Just shout out a sound that you want to include one at a time so I can hear it. Let's see, what is that in IPA? I'm going to call that a high back. So just a high rounded back, sorry. Oh, I forgot to switch to IPA. There. Okay, next. Okay. Do you mean the or just a trilled R? Whoever said that. I'm going to call that a velar trill. Okay, next. What? A quack, did you say? Something that occurs in a natural language, please. The IPA doesn't have anything for quack. How about a instead? Okay. That is a post-alveolar click. Anything else? Zh is nice and simple. Zh. Okay. No whistles. Sorry, that's too complicated. Ch. Okay. Anything else? No. Sounds, bass sounds like what? Oi. 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 Okay. So v, z, vos, what? Voiceless vowel. I think that'll be a little bit too challenging for people to be able to pronounce. It exists, but I don't want to go there. No. Sounds that you can make with your mouth and throat. Sorry. Like I said, a naturalistic language. We can go really fucking weird in the workshop if you want to. But for now, let's just keep it within the realm of slightly sane. Okay. I'm going to call that K. Anyway, I think that's good enough for now. Let me round this out. So we have put K, gr, j, kh, v, s, z, br, k, oi, h, and oi, a, I, and u. So let's see, what is this missing? We've got a g and we've got a k, so I'm going to add a k. Let's see, what else? We don't have any nasals. Do we have any fricatives? Yes, we do. So therefore, we should have s, and we do. We've got no affricates. We've got enough vowels. Sorry? No gnashing of teeth in my lecture, please. Hopefully it's not that bad. I think this will be fine for now. Okay, so let's go back. Okay, good. So now that we know what sounds are in the language, and we can add more later maybe, we need to decide how you form syllables. So here, a C means a consonant, a V means a vowel, and N is nasal consonants, but we don't actually have them. So ignore the N on the first one. That'll just be CV. So don't worry about the particular sounds that these two examples use or what the words are or anything. The point is, for example, in Tokipona, you can only have one consonant at the beginning of each syllable in what's called the onset. Whereas in English, well, really you can have three, but let's simplify and say you can have two. For example, st, an, had a, sl, I, tr, t, r, e, with a, th, r, ed, d, r, im. So I'm sort of emphasizing it, but just so you can hear that. English, of course, is actually pretty extreme, like strengths is one syllable. Most languages are way simpler than that. And I'm simplifying here. We're not going to go that complicated because it's a little complicated to write the rules down. Anyway, what do you want? Consonant vowel or a consonant consonant vowel consonant? So cheer for a consonant vowel. Cheer for a consonant consonant vowel consonant. Okay, I think it's CV wins. Yay. Easier for me. Okay. So. Okay. So we don't have any clusters, and that means that we get to skip making a cluster rule, which makes it easier. Yay. So we can try the other one later, but just so you know, if we did have clusters, which is what it's called when you have more than one consonant in either the onset or the coda of a syllable, which is the beginning and the end, you have to have a rule to say what consonants are allowed in what order. Like, for example, in English, you can have, strengths, but you can't have sense, right? So there's a rule to how what order you can put them in, what things are compatible, and so forth. Anyway, we get to skip that. Yay. Oh, wow, I'm under time. Awesome. One last thing for sounds. This is a little bit more complicated. Most people don't really realize it, but there are variations in how you produce sounds. So I'm going to pronounce two and just try to tell if you can tell the difference. P and P. In this first one, I'm pronouncing it with a little puff of air called aspiration. So P, P, P. In English, there's a rule that if you have P at the beginning of a word or a stressed syllable, it's aspirated. And if not, you don't. So everyone, try this. Get your hand. Put it in front of your mouth. Come on, everyone. Yep. Now say spit, spit, and pit. So you'll notice that in pit, you feel a much stronger puff of air against your hand. Try it a couple times. Spit, spit, and pit. And, well, at least for those of you who speak English well. This is not something that non-native speakers pick up very easily, of course. It's usually not taught explicitly, and it makes a big difference in whether someone is perceived as having an accent. So, phonology rules. Yes. So we don't have clusters, so they're the simplest rule is, in most languages that have clusters, you have to have voice assimilation. So, for example, in English, you could have stop, but you couldn't have stop. And you couldn't have stop, right? The s and the t is compatible. The z and the d is maybe compatible, although maybe not. But they have to be the same voicing. But we don't have that. So let's try. We do have a front vowel, and we do have s. So what I'm going to do is add a palatalization rule. So I'm going to add sh, sh. And the rule is phonological rules. So s goes to sh before, let's say, ah. Ah and e. And u is a back vowel in this case, and so is oi. So what that means is instead of saying, so for example, if you say soy in this language, that's a legal syllable, right? But if you wanted to have the vowel ah, it would actually be pronounced shy. And s and sh are perceived as the same sound. So just like in English, like we just demonstrated, p and p are the same sound, quote unquote. They're just pronounced a little bit differently in different contexts. So that's one rule. Does anyone want to suggest another rule? It's a little bit more complicated, so. No? Okay. I'm going to add another one then. Let's see. We don't have nasalization, voweling. Yeah, we have a couple uvular consonants. We've got k and r. So what we're going to do is have vowel lowering, which means that our I is going to go to, let's say, aw. I'm going to do it. So, I goes to aw in front of a k or a r. So that's just how you write the rules. So likewise, I can do if you want to be formal about it. So anyway, so in a real language, of course, you'd want to develop this a lot more. Real languages have a huge number of phonological rules, but it's more of an advanced subject, and I just wanted to give you a taste for it. Right. Oh, cool. Still under time. So, of course, no languages actually use the IPA as a writing system. It's just used by linguists. Every language has its own writing system. There are a lot of different kinds of writing systems, and we don't have the time to go into it at all. So just take a look at Omnilot. It's an excellent website, and it lists literally probably a couple hundred writing systems of all sorts of different kinds that you probably have never seen before. So what we're going to do is the simplest possible thing, which is a romanization. So we've got these sounds. So we also, in fact, I forgot to mention this. U is a allophone for all. Okay. So let's give each of these letters. So romanization. Oops. For the basic ones, I'm going to keep the same. P, T, K. What letter should we use for G? R. Okay. What about what letter? X. Okay. What letter for J? J. G. Okay. How about H? H. Z. Let's see. V and Z are the same. How about V? Sorry, I mispronounced that. B. B. Okay. S. I'll just do S. K. How about G? G. Q? Do we? Oh, yes, yes. Okay. Oh, sorry. That's just because I missed it when I was going over this. Yeah. So, got, how about Q? Oi, I'll simplify that and just say it's O and the Y is implied. U? U? Okay. That's pretty close. A and E. That should be an E. Stop correcting me. Okay, so this is how we would write these sounds. Now, of course, in a real writing system, it's very, very far from one-to-one in almost any language. If you look at English, is kind of a flagrant example of this, where our writing system is really more about depicting the historical context of how words have been derived rather than how they are currently pronounced. For example, you don't say a knigget in shining armor. Sorry, a knicht in shining armor, I think, is the Middle English version. But it's preserved because spelling changes a lot slower than sound changes. But we can think about that later. So before we can make words, we need to know how to put pieces of words together. There are a few different ways to do this. So there are isolating languages, like Tokipona, which just have each piece of a word be an independent little unit. Chinese is another example of this. These words don't combine at all. Each of these is a separate little thing. They're not reducible. You can't say that we means something and ke means something else and they're put together. It's just weka. That means omit needless words, incidentally. On the other hand, there's synthetic languages, like German, which can stack a lot of pieces together. For example, there is the Rindfleischetikett Kierungs Überwachungsaufgaben Übertragungsgesetz. This is a real law. According to Wikipedia, the person who introduced this to Parliament apologized when he wrote it. And for those of you who don't speak German, like me, that means the Beef Labeling Supervision Duty Assignment Law. And no, I don't know what that means, but that's what Wikipedia says. So within synthetic, there are a couple sort of subcategorizes. There's two ways, more or less, that you can put pieces together. Each piece can either do its own little thing, like in Turkish, or you can overload them to do more than one thing, like in Spanish. The Turkish example, that's kirdim. The kir means break, which is the root part of break. The actual verb is kirdim. But kirdir, I think, I forget. The b is specifically the past tense, or iyoru, I think. And ajak is the future. And the last consonant, the mn, or just nothing, represents whether it's first, second, or third person. Whereas in Spanish, the person and the tense are sort of meshed together, and you can't really say that the imos, the e, is the plural or the past tense. It's sort of wrapped together. There's also other languages that don't really fit this framework very well, like Arabic. So for example, kitabun, maktabun, katabtu, they're all related because they have the kutub, which means stuff relating to writing, more or less. It's hard to be more specific, really. And they use templates. So for example, the i-a-un is a template that occurs in other triconsonantal roots. And it sort of, it's hard to be exactly specific on what it does, but if you look at what it does across a lot of words, you get a sort of sense of overall, they have a fairly strong similarity. These can be really fun, especially if you haven't seen a language like this before, but they're also kind of complicated, so we're not going to do them. We're going to make it simple. Do you want an isolating language, where every word is a single atomic piece, or an agglutinative language, where you can add a bunch of modifiers onto a word? Incidentally, that says, which means I speak Chinese very poorly, which I do, as anyone listening to this who knows Chinese will know. And the other is, which is, we have not eaten. The tachi binds to watashi. It's not a separate word. It's like a plural. The root form of eat is taberu. And tabetaku nakatta is the past negative form. Anyway, so two choices, isolating or agglutinative. Cheers for isolating. Okay. Cheers for agglutinative. Okay, agglutinative it is. Now we finally have all we need to start making some words. Here's where it gets a little bit more fun. We're going to translate a couple sentences together into our language. Incidentally, in the first run-through of this, I let people suggest just any random sentence. That turned out to be kind of hard, because people suggest really grammatically weird sentences that they don't realize, like with... anyway. Hello world is not bad. Okay, actually, let's do that. Hello world. Okay, thank you. That's a lot simpler than some of the ones I've gotten. I've got some other suggestions that I've got written down in my little cheat sheet here. But first off, let's just mention the morphology is agglutination. Well, agglutinative, I guess, is the more usual way of saying it. Okay. So, hello can be a single word, or it can be a complex word. For example, I don't know if in German you can say just hello, hallo, I guess you can. But there are some languages where you have to say, like, guten Tag. There isn't really a separate hello. So, do you want a single word for hello, or should it be complicated? Complicated. Okay. So, what are the parts of hello? Can you give them in English, like, what the two parts of hello mean? You? Okay. Sorry?
I greet you.
Okay. So we can rephrase that. I greet you, world. Right? Okay, that's fine. So let's say we need a word for I, we need a word for greet, we need you, we need world. And maybe we need, we'll get to that in a second. So, I. How do we say I? So again, look at the sounds that we have. Oi. Oi. Okay, I hear several people shouting oi, so let's do that. Oi. Actually, that's just written. I'm going to write it phonologically because this is going to be easier for some other things. But if we were writing this in a romanization, it would just be O. Greet. What should greet be? We could do R, although I should point out that in a basic consonant vowel system, the vowel is actually a vowel. However, there are phonotactics that allow non-vocalic nuclei. So, for example, English is in fact one of them. The word butter, the er doesn't have a vowel. The er is sort of acting like a vowel. So we could actually do that if you want. So anyway, do you guys want to have r just mean greet, or anyone have another suggestion? How? Ha? Ha? Urcha? Sorry, what? Urch, 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 urch. We can't do urcha because it's just a CV, right? So that would be urcha, and we're not allowed to do that. But what we can do is urch, urchi, urch, ri, richa. How about that? Richa. Close enough. You, what should you be? You want just plain click? That, again, we're not allowed to do because we have a vowel that's required. But how about can you do that? Let's try that. You should be okay. And world, what's world? What? Say that again. Ooh. Oh, okay. So, that's what you want world to be? Oh, man. Okay. Okay, man. If you can't pronounce it, it's not my fault. Okay. So, world is, let's see if I can pronounce that. Lot, lot, lot. I can't do that, man. Lot, lot. Okay, fuck that. I'm gonna add a phonological rule. That says that a goes to a k in between vowels. So that's actually pronounced. So this is phonologically that, but phonetically it is a ka ka. So ka ka ka. A lot easier there. And this is actually how phonological rules do develop. I'm serious. People sort of pronounce stuff in easier and easier ways over time. That's actually a specific process called lenition. But people pronounce stuff in a different way over time, usually because stuff gets easier, or stuff gets sounds more haughty or whatever, and it just eventually gets baked into the rules of the language. And we're going to save vocativity for later. We've got a few words. That's pretty good. But to make a sentence, we need to know how to put them together. So the most basic metric of syntax is called basic word order, which is in a simple sentence, and simple has a technical definition, but let's just say simple. What order do you put the subject, the object, and the verb? Every possible order exists, but some are much, much rarer than others. I didn't list the really weird, rare choices, sorry. We're going to go with the three most frequent choices. So VOS, VOS, OVS and OSV are the ones that would come after this. So the S is subject, O is object, and V is verb. In the Japanese example is otoko wa inu wa mita, which is the man saw the dog. Otoko is man, inu is dog, and mita is saw. So the last one is Hawaiian. I don't actually know Hawaiian, but a friend of mine does. So he gave me that example. Anyway, so do you all understand what this, how the order goes? Yeah? Okay. So which one do you want to use for our language? SOV, SVO, or VSO? So cheers for SOV. Okay. Cheers for SVO. Okay. And cheers for VSO. Okay, I think that's a pretty conclusive one. VSO it is. Okay, so now that we know how to put a sentence together, let's actually finish these sentences. So syntax is VSO. So greet. So I'm going to, there's actually a little bit of complication. If you want to know more about this, you should look up what are called agent markers and grammatical agents. And blah, blah, blah. I'm blanking on the exact term. But there is a book called Describing Morpho Syntax by Thomas Paine. I actually have it with me if you want to take a look. It's really good, but we don't have enough time to go into the complicated stuff. So I'm going to just assume that these take the same bindings that they do in English. So greet, let's say the subject is the person who's doing the greeting and the object is the person who's being greeted or the thing that's being greeted. So we have VSO, that means this is Richa. Hey, don't do that. What the hell? I don't want you to autocorrect me. forget it. Okay, Richa oi. Sorry. Okay. And then the vocative is a little weird, right? So I think this is called vocative. Let me just double check my own slides. Fuck it. I might be misremembering what the case is called. But O world is sort of where you're addressing someone, so you can have a case for that. So do you want to just stick the world at the end? Do you want to replace you with the word for world?
Additional
world with a suffix. World with a suffix? We could do that. We are agglutinative, so we could do something like... I'm going to... So, and then we'd add a vocative suffix, maybe. So what would a vocative suffix be? A suffix for the thing that you were addressing. Okay, sure. Okay, so let's say voc. If I forgot what vocative is, sorry. I'm stressed. So there is... Sure, so we've got our first sentence. Not bad. Let's see. Say it? Fine. Okay, actually, let me just check how we are on time. Okay, that's not what I wanted. Go back. Okay, so we've got a little bit of time. Good. Yeah. So that sentence is Richa oi ka. That's technically illegal because we have a CV phonotactic, right? I guess it doesn't show up when I highlight, but we have CV, right? So we have a required vowel.
There's an exception.
We could have an exception. However, I'm actually going to overrule you on that one. So the standard way that this works in a naturalistic language, which is supposedly what we're trying to do here, is that what you do is you add a vowel to the end. So let's say zero goes to the simplest vowel we have is let's say u. Fine. U is u at the end of a word. Is that right? Yeah. I think that's really right. So it gets inserted if there's a consonant at the end of a word, you insert u. So that should actually be. Sorry? Which rule are you referring to? The second one? That doesn't apply here. That's only that it comes after a uvular consonant that turns into a, right? And is not a uvular consonant. That is bilabial, in fact. So, we actually have time to translate another sentence. Let's try this. The old hacker fixed Georg's code. Okay. So, we need a word for old hacker. Hey, stop that. Thank you. Fix Georg and code. Okay, so definite, maybe past and maybe possessive. Anyway, so old. What's old? E, just E. He. Yes. Okay. He. Fine. Hacker. What? Again? Louder. Pretty. P-I-T-I, what? Key, P-T key. Okay, yes? Okay, P-T key. Sure. Fix. What's fix? P-T key, yeah? Okay. Okay, so Georg, we don't actually have the sound g in our language. So the closest thing that we have is z. So Georg is going to be renamed. Is sort of E. R, we don't have a regular R, but we have a velar, so R. And again, we don't have, and actually we need to insert a vowel here because we're not allowed to have just a consonant. So our rule is to insert a U, an U, unless otherwise specified, so that's ziri. And for the hell of it, let's do that twice. So Georg is now ziri, ziri. Okay, code. What's code? Sorry, what? Second, what second rule? Je? That's right, finally, that actually applies. Okay, so the rule is that it goes to a, so that is a. Sorry, good catch. So that's je. Something like that. Code. What's code? O PT? Just PT? Okay, sure, fine by me. So that again implies that hacker is a combination of something. P. And what is P?
It's the name of the entire language.
Sorry?
Name of the entire language.
Oh, okay. Maybe letter. Letter is pretty reasonable for a... I should have known better than to ask that at a hacker's conference. let's say letter. Hey, stop capitalizing. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. Do we want to specify that it's definite? So the old hacker. Not all languages actually specify this. For example, Japanese doesn't specify definiteness. Tokipona doesn't. Yeah. What? Oh, time. Yeah, got it. Thank you. Okay. We don't. Okay. Nothing. Past tense. Do we want to specify past tense? That's also optional. And for that matter, a lot of languages, instead of specifying a past tense, they just use time words. Like Chinese, for example. You can't say a past tense verb, but you can say, yesterday I did something. Do we want to specify past tense at all? No? Okay. No past tense. That's fine. Actually, there are languages where the main kind of verbal tense is a combination of, say, past and present, and then future is a separate tense, as opposed to English, for example, where... there's some languages also where past and future are grouped together in... Or no, present and future, sorry. Present and future are grouped together, and past is a separate tense. Okay, what's future? What's the suffix future?
A.
A?
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 A? A? Ah. Oh, ah, ah. Sorry, you have to say it phonologically. Okay, ah, and then maybe we can reconsider what past is. And... To old? Old. Huh? He? How does tie into he? Oh. Okay, so you want like past tense to be hia? Is that it? Ahi. Okay, that's perfectly reasonable. It's actually not that weird. Okay, and possessive. What's possessive? Again, a suffix. Key?
It should contain the word for I and for you.
That's really uncommon. Actually, how about, let's see if we can hack something together with this. Let's say possessive is key. Oh, we could do that. What do you think? Just fuse them?
Yeah.
Sure. Fuse. Okay. Yeah, don't remind me. Okay, so the old hacker fixed Georg's code. The fix goes first. Fix is ptkia. Then we've got hacker is pt... PTA, yes, past tense is PTA Achki. Thank you. So hacker, old is, what was it? He. And then we've got Georg is. What the hell was it? Oh, right. Yeah, there we go. There we go. And possessive is fusion. So let's say code goes first and PT that. Ta-da. So the old hacker fixed Georg's code is PTKIAHI, PTKIHI, PTGIROGI. Okay. That's not bad for 30 minutes. So, of course, what we just did is only the very, very, very beginnings of real conlang. It's got a long way to go. Real conlanging is a bunch of revisions, just like publishing code, for example. You don't just make it in one sitting. You iterate, and you iterate, and then you iterate. You tweak, you add stuff, you rip stuff out until you get something you really like. People also spend a lot of time developing the culture of the people who speak the language, maybe the world, maybe they make maps and governments and all sorts of crazy stuff. You can make a whole family of languages related to this P. You can make dialects like formal P or hillbilly P. You can make informal P. How do you cuss someone out and threaten to kill them in P? You know. These are probably different ways of speaking. So the thing is, it used to be that people just sort of were kind of afraid of talking about conlanging, and Tolkien even called it famously his secret vice. I figure, fuck that. There's really no point to keeping things to yourself these days. There's a big online community of conlangers. We all talk to each other. We share our work. We translate some similar things together. We translate from each other's languages in what's called a conlang relay. Like I mentioned, we send each other Christmas cards in our conlangs, et cetera. All you have to do is document your language online, start using it to translate and to create new texts, and join the mailing lists and the fora. There are a lot of resources online for you. Conlang is probably the most active one. ZBB is almost as active, and it's a lot more informal. They're fairly different in personality, so you might want to look at both and figure out which one suits you better. These books are really, really good. I very strongly recommend getting them, especially Describing Morphosyntax and In the Land of Invented Languages. Describing Morphosyntax is really meant for field linguists who are documenting an endangered language, but it turns out that the process of interviewing someone of how you speak your language is really, really, really similar to interviewing yourself of how you speak the language that you're making up. And the Okrent's book is sort of a discussion of the history of conlang. And even I, who knew already quite a bit about conlang, found it extremely informative and entertaining. If you want to learn more about conlang, visit the Language Creation Society. We do a lot of stuff for conlangers. We've got a podcast. You should add it to your RSS reader. We run a conference more or less once a year. The next one's going to be in Europe sometime in 2010. We have jobs, in fact. We actually recently finished one for a major TV studio. Unfortunately, I'm still under NDA, so I'm not allowed to tell you who. But if you go to conlang.org and sign up for our news list, you'll find out. So a couple of short plugs. If you or someone you know is working on a project that could use a professionally made conlang, please come talk to us. So a lot of people just sort of kludge it or make shit up and make it nonsense. That's kind of lame. Why not have something that actually has some depth to it? If you find what we do useful, please join. We're a nonprofit. Basically, 100% of our revenue goes to doing cool stuff for conlangers. And there are some nice perks for members. And if you happen to know how to use Audacity or Final Cut, we need audio and video editors to help process the podcast audio and the conference videos. So if you're willing to help out, please talk to me. Speaking of plugs, I do other stuff, all that stuff. If you find any of that stuff interesting, please come talk to me. And also, I'm running a workshop on Wednesday. If you want to learn several different techniques of how to hack your own mind state, and also while you're at it, get an inoculation against the techniques Scientology uses to hack you, please come by. that's it. I love getting feedback. Thank you very much. Do we have time for questions?
Well, actually, we're just in time, but because there's no presentation after this, we can still do a few questions.
Cool.
I would say questions. Come to the sides, to the microphones, and pose your question.
Or if you don't want to go to the mic, I'll shout it out for you.
Which Chomsky class is the language we constructed in?
What language, sorry?
The Fulang.
Fulang?
What? Yeah, we constructed this Fulang.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Fulang.
P.
We, yeah. Yeah, P. Which Chomsky class is it in?
Chomsky?
Noam Chomsky?
Oh, Chomsky. What about Chomsky?
Yeah, which class?
Klaus?
Class.
Class?
Chomsky class? You never heard of Chomsky classes?
I let's talk later. I don't know what you're referring to.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Questions? Yes?
For the next time, why don't you try, instead of George's code, some tongue twister?
A like tongue twister.
Fischer's Fritze fischt frische Fischer and stuff.
I thought of doing that. The reason is I've got not a fucking clue what you guys are going to add as my phonology. And it's hard to make up a tongue twister on the fly. The reason I used Georg was I knew it would break in the phonology that we used. And I wanted to demonstrate that languages have different sound systems. And you can't just import a foreign word directly. Like, for example, in Japan, McDonald's isn't called McDonald's. They have actually a very similar phonotactic rule. It's called makudunarudu. And that's because they have to have a vowel after each consonant. And I just wanted to demonstrate that instead of explaining it.
I see. Okay, thanks.
Anyone else? No? Okay.
Okay, thank you. Big applause.
So if you want to learn more... Oh, you have a question. Okay. Yes. Go.
How many languages do you speak?
I speak English, Spanish, French, Russian, American Sign Language fluently enough to have a conversation. I can get by in Japanese, and I've learned Arabic and Mandarin, but I've forgotten almost all of it. Ich spreche kein Deutsch, though.
Okay, one last question.
Okay.
How many conlangs? I don't speak any conlangs fluently. I'm working on the two that I mentioned, and I know a fair amount about the linguistics of quite a few conlangs. Yes?
So we made a language, and of course it's kind of a quick mock-up thingy. So compared to not on the conlangs, but to the actual spoken languages on the world, what's the weirdness or complexity of this language? Like, where does it fit from 1 to 100 or something like that?
So let's see. The phonology is fairly weird. So I didn't completely round it out. For example, it's really rare for a language to have just one click. We only have the one click. But real languages that have clicks tend to have multiple clicks, like and sorry, and for example, I can't do clicks very well. What else is weird? The brr is the only trill that we have. Sorry, no, it's not. We also have the rr, so I guess that's not too bad. I would suspect that a normal language would also have rr, but it might not have it contrastively. It'd probably have it allophonically. The phonological rules are pretty normal. Agglutination and VSO are very, very common. The words that we have, so let's say, what is, so if fix is ptkia and a is future. So fix means like will hack, I guess. And if PT key is hacker, or maybe it's hack also, and key is some sort of suffix, and PT is code, so code plus what is hacker, so maybe make or change or something like that. So this is actually pretty reasonable. The word world is kind of weird, but it's not unheard of for a language that has clicks, other than what I mentioned about a language that has clicks would actually probably have more clicks that are contrastive. But it's not totally out there. It's weird. You guys wanted weird, so that's what we went for. But, you know, yeah.
I have another question.
Yo, go.
Because I am a native Spanish speaker. And this thing of that we cannot say words like with SP, like Spain or speaker. And there are other languages that cannot say other words. And I wanted to... When I am in, I live in Amsterdam, so people make a lot of fun because, like, I like Estonet and all this, and I say, yeah, we cannot pronounce it like that. And they say, mm-hmm. What do you mean you cannot pronounce it? Okay, I can say Spain, but why, I don't understand really why is it that in my mind structure don't allow me to do this. And
yeah.
I would like to know what you think about. If this is the language I learned, my mother language.
When did you first learn English?
When I don't know around nine, yeah not I didn't speak fluently English until I was 18 or.
Okay, but not before you were say 7. No. Okay. So, yeah, I mean this is exactly what I was talking about with the Georg thing, right? This idea of phonological rules are actually really, really inherent to how people inherently think of language. And it's reflexive. You won't realize that you're doing it unless you study linguistics or unless you study a lot of foreign languages and try to actually speak them well instead of just speaking everything with an American accent or a German accent, as the case may be. And what you're doing is you're applying your phonological rules to other languages' words. So, for example, if I were a stupid American trying to speak Spanish, instead of saying "Yo voy a España mañana," I might say "Yo voy a España mañana." Which is about how you would say that in English. And that's a case of sort of misapplying your native rules to a foreign language. And it's actually pretty hard to learn all the phonological rules of a foreign language. Because people who do it for real do it just reflexively. It's not something they're thinking of, like, oh, I need to aspirate this P. I bet none of you who speak English, unless you're linguists, knew about that aspiration rule until I told you to try just putting your hand in front of your mouth and saying spit versus pit. But you do it. You learn it, and it's reflexive. And if you're trying to learn a foreign language, it's not reflexive until you learn it.
Now, the other part of the question is that if this effect that has on my brain and the consciousness uh-huh. it does, it would make a difference to speak some languages or other for logical operations or for, I don't know, Alzheimer's or something.
Logical operations of what?
If these different phonological rules and the structure of the language I think on are going to affect the way I see the world or I do mathematical operations or...
Okay, so there's actually a really famous theory in linguistics called the Saper-Whorf hypothesis by Benjamin Whorf and I forget what Saper's first name was. But there's a strong and a weak version and it's been sort of controversial. But the simple version of what it means is the language that you speak shapes the way you think. So the hypothesis is that you think in language. This isn't actually always true. I don't think in language. I think abstractly. But most people experience their thought as sort of a running monologue, right? You're thinking in words. And so the theory is, if you're thinking in words and your language doesn't have an easy way to express a certain thing, you're actually going to find it hard to think that certain thing. So it's been definitely disproven in the strong case. So for example, color terms are the standard example. In some languages, they have different terms for different colors. Like, for example, in Japanese, there's no different basic color term blue versus green. There's just aoi, which is sort of a lumped together version of the two. Versus in Russian, there's actually an extra category where there's galuboy versus sinya. So, for example, that shirt that pink hair girl's wearing is sinya, or is, sorry, is galuboy, whereas that shirt is sinya. And the shirt he's wearing, the darker blue one, that one is also sinya. Whereas in English, we call them both blue. So even though this is true and people would say this is blue in English, or in Japanese, they'd say both her shirt and her pants are aoi, that doesn't mean they're colorblind. They can see that these are different colors if you ask them. It's not that strong. But there is some evidence that the language that you use primes your thoughts. And if you have a term for something, and this comes up especially in political stuff, if you have a term for something that has really strong connotations, then that will prime how you think about the thing in question. Like, for example, I know it's a controversial example, but it's a perfect example of how this influences thinking. The phrasing of the abortion debate is pro-life versus pro-choice. The implications of these are, in pro-life, the implication is that a fetus is a life. The fetus is an unborn thing, and therefore you're invoking murdering people is bad. And I think we all agree murdering people is generally bad. The pro-choice people ignore that, and they phrase it as choice is good. Control over your own body is good. And it's just a completely different way of framing the thing. And if you think in one term or the other term, it'll prime how you think about the issues involved. If you want to learn more about that, I strongly recommend a book by George Lakoff called Metaphors We Live By, and a second book by him called Women, Fire, and Dangerous Things. There's actually a language in which women, fire, and dangerous things all come under this one category of words. Ask me later if you care, or read it. It's actually a really good book. Anyway, hopefully that answers your question.
Okay, we have to round it up here. If you have more questions, please come to the stage. Thank you, Sai. A big applause.
So again, feedback. I like feedback. Email me or fill out the survey. Come to the workshop. Come to my meditation workshop. Email me, call me, whatever. Thank you.